Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we talk making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way. And on today's show, we're talking taxes, not practice, taxes.
And speaking of taxes, and a special note, we've entered the FedEx Small Business Grant Contest. Thank you for those of you who have already supported. Please continue to do so all through the month of March. We have the potential to win as much as 50, yes, 50,000 to invest specifically in the P&B brand to be great and reach more people. Of course, there's levels to everything, so you can support us in three easy ways. You can vote today. You can vote once every 24 hours. Or I understand maybe you don't want to give up the email address. Maybe you got some, scandalous things going on, and so you can't pass out the email address like that. I understand completely. I'm not going to question what you do after hours. You can still visit and just click the share this business and support us on the social medias. Or if you really want to go OD and you have a website, there's also a post this voting badge option there. We've made it easy for you. You can find all these three options to support us at paypal.co/FedEx. That'll be in the show notes as well. It is case sensitive for the people who have already asked. So that's paypal.co/FedEx, capital F, capital E, FedEx, like the company. That's the FedEx Small Business Grant Contest. Every vote counts, not like the election. And so help us win. Help us be great. We're trying to get this 50,000.
And I know I said something last week about the election, too. And I'm like, people might feel some type of way about that, but I don't care. So it is super important to vote as far as coming up off the email address. I get it. But the absolute best way to support us for this is to vote, and multiple times at that. And so if you like what we're doing now while also juggling day jobs, imagine what we could do with additional resources and the ability to really implement some of these things that we've been talking about, other parts of the site that we want to get up and running, merchandise store, events, whatever you can imagine. Just imagine what we could do if we had these additional resources. And I realize I said imagine a lot, but I'm going to keep going with it.
Inspirational, brother. And for this episode, we welcome Rianca Dorsonville, who first joined us in November 2018, comes back on the show to talk taxes, since it's the season of probably giving for more individuals than want to admit or accept. So here's our chat with Rianca. Hope you enjoy. And welcome to the show, Rianca.
Thank you guys for having me back.
So I know most of the people are already going to be here for that hashtag tax season questions. They probably think that we're going to figure out how they can lift that tax return. So I don't know about all that. Let me go ahead and level set, but we'll see what we can do for you. But before we get there, let's update the people. You last joined us in November 2018, a financial plan for Henry's, high earners, not rich yet. And I see you out here making moves. So go ahead and brag a little bit about yourself. What's happened since then?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. No, I mean, yeah, I've been very blessed with some awesome opportunities. I am now a monthly column writer for NPR NewsHour. So you can check that out, writing from the perspective of a older millennial trying to help us get our money right. Also, every year, CNBC may add or subtract to the CNBC Financial Advisory Council, and I have a 4-year track record. They asked me back, so I am excited to continue to be on the CNBC Financial Advisor Council, and I also write for them as well.
And I saw you just did a recent piece. Was this for NPR where you were talking about first generational wealth? I want you to plug that because that's a really great read.
Yeah, so it was actually for CNBC.
Okay.
So yeah, with CNBC, one of the big things, and we kind of talked about this during our last conversation, is that for first generation wealth builders, whether you are Black, Hispanic, first generation immigrant to the United States, we feel this pressure that once we made it, we have to help the village that basically raised us. And while I feel you and I completely understand, we have to do it responsibly. And so just with me being a financial planner and working with the first generation wealth builders, that's a constant conversation and balancing act I have to do with them. And also I had to do in my personal life of how do I financially make sure I'm secure while also helping other family members. So the analogy that I gave in the article is that when we take flight, right? You two are jet setters. any time before we take off, the stewardess comes on and they give us an illustration. And what do they always say?
I'm usually playing with my smartphone at that time. So they tell me to put my phone away. I put it on airplane mode.
Marcus, okay, not you. All right, Rich, you know the answer.
Put your mask on before you put on someone else's?
Yes, your oxygen mask. So it doesn't matter. They say it doesn't matter if you have a child with you, if you have someone older, you need to put your oxygen mask on first before you help anyone else, right? Because it's like, all right, if I am not breathing, if I can't help myself, how can I help my child? How can I help my parents? How can I help my grandparents? And I use the same analogy with my clients as well. I want you to put your financial oxygen mask on first. And so I did a piece for CNBC just talking about that because I lived it. And I think I shared this in our last conversation as well. I'm a first generation college graduate in my family. And at the age of 26, I started out earning both my mom and dad. And just the mental of that, it was just... It was uncomfortable. It was like, all right, now do I need to take care of my family? You know, I'm not living paycheck to paycheck anymore. Wow, what is this? I can save to a brokerage account? Like, it was just mind blowing. So it's a great piece. And I feel like it's generating a lot of conversation. So look out for a follow-up piece.
And so I can't remember if we talked about this last time, but did your parents know how much you made?
No. No. Now, after I started my own business about 3.5 years ago and started earning zero, well, it started with zero, I opened up and I shared with my dad how much I made. And his eyes was just like, what? I was like, I know. He was like, you walked away from that? I was like, Dad. He was like, all right. I know bigger and better is coming. And so yeah, he was shocked. He was shocked.
And I guess since we're here, we'll rotate into the tax season questions after this. Can you talk about the walkaway experience?
Oh, yeah. The walkaway experience of transitioning from an employee to entrepreneur?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And I think we can probably plug in some taxes like later on in the conversation that some things you just don't think about as an entrepreneur and tax as it goes with taxes. But because I'm a financial planner, I had the privilege really of understanding what it takes to run a business. I had the skills of understanding budgeting and just cash flow projection because I talked to clients and couples about managing finances as an individual and then as a couple, combining finances. I was easily able to have a conversation with my husband about me stepping away and how do we as a family manage living with one income, living in a one income household. So it was a process. It didn't happen overnight. It wasn't one day. I was just fed up with the boss man. It was just like, you know what? I'm done. Peace out. It was at least 6 months prep where I had a conversation. Again, I had a conversation with my husband. Like, listen, X, Y, and Z is happening. And that's a whole nother episode we can talk about. But X, Y, and Z is happening and, you know, my health was becoming at risk. And I was just like, listen, I think it's time for me to walk away. Good thing I have a very supportive husband. I was like, all right, listen, so here's how much you make. Here's how much I am making now.
Whoa. I got to jump in. Mm-hmm. So y'all know how much each other makes?
Oh, heck yeah.
Because I know a couple people's eyebrows went up right there. Okay.
Oh, really? No.
What was that conversation? I want you to tell the walk away story, but I know that surprised some people. I know for a fact, because that's like a tweet that took off for us. It's like talking about discussion between, and most people, well, I think like 50%, I can't say most, didn't even know what their partner makes. So can you talk about that as well?
Oh, no.
Even with spouses though? Because I would expect that like if you're married, I would hope that y'all would be open with each other.
I'm going to go see if I can pull this article and y'all continue the conversation.
Okay. Yeah. Especially with spouses. If you have a partner, a significant other, and you all are thinking about growing a life together, you need to know how much you make. I mean, think about it. Your home, your household is a business, right? Do you want it being run separately under the same household, or do you want to combine forces and like take over the world together? That's the mentality I have. Let's combine forces and take over the world together. And because I'm a financial planner, my husband, you know, deemed me the financial steward of the household. Before we make any big financial decisions, we talk about it first. However, from the execution of it, it's me. It's my responsibility. I took that on. When it comes to investing our money, I took that on because it makes sense. I'm the financial planner. So yes, I know exactly what Reggie makes. I know I knew it as soon as he took his job offer. And he also knew how much I made. I give him recommendations on what he needs to be saving to his 401k and his investment options. So Reggie is lucky. Anyways, so yes. And again, that could be another conversation, but if you don't know what your spouse makes or your significant other makes, that's a red flag to me because so much can go into that. Like that in itself is a seed that can fester into something bigger later on in your relationship. So I'm gonna pin that for now, but that's something that you should definitely talk about. So going back to the walkaway story, we both agreed that, well, one, we already had an emergency fund, but because I didn't know when I was going to get my first client, when I was actually going to walk away, we started saving my paycheck. And the reason why we could save my paycheck and start living off of one income is because lifestyle creep didn't happen to us. So what is lifestyle creep? Lifestyle creep is, all right, you've been balling on a budget for so long, you know, you're earning, I don't know, let's call it $70,000 and you got a big raise and now you're earning $100,000. You're like, whoa, I'm in the six-figure club. I'm going to move out of this one-bedroom apartment. I'm going to move into a two-bedroom apartment. I'm going to also upgrade my house. Look how many expenses that you just upgraded for yourself. So your rent just went up. Your car payment just went up. If you got a new car, your car insurance probably went up as well. And so you have to be very mindful and careful of that because that money, that extra money that you're putting to rent, that extra money that you're putting into a car note that you probably had already paid off your car and the extra money that you're putting into that car insurance, you can actually be investing that money or you can actually be putting more money to your retirement account. But for me, we decided to, again, save my money, let it be stashed in cash so that when I did walk away, if for some reason anything happened to Reggie, if anything happened to his income, we were set for at least 6 months. So that's kind of how it happened. I mean, there's like more to the story than that, but I guess to bring it all back, one, we had a conversation as a couple. Two, you know, he was supportive of the decision. Three, you know, we started saving my income to cash. We stopped investing into the market because if you need money within, you know, 4 to 5 years, that money should not go into the market because you don't know what it's going to do.
Thank you for saying that, by the way.
Mm-hmm. and so that money should be in something like a CD, certificate of deposit, something that's earning a little bit more than your regular savings account or a high interest bearing savings account. And I think we talked about that in our last conversation. So listeners, go back and check the show notes for that. So yeah, so that's how it happened, really. Just prep for it. Mentally, you also have to understand, like, what's your why is a big piece. A lot of people are driven by receiving a paycheck every other week, you know? It's like, oh man, I just work 50 hours, but at least it's payday, you know? Well, as an entrepreneur, you can work 70 hours and you won't receive a payday. And if money doesn't hit your account, are you still, is that flame still burning for you to continue to work? So you have to figure out another tangible thing that makes you happy besides earning a paycheck, because it could be your first month, for 6 months that you don't receive any income from that widget that you just built, from that software that you just built, from that client or the services that you're offering. And you just have to be mentally prepared for that.
And just to give people that update, and we don't have to talk about this. This could be another episode. It was 46%. So only 5 in 10 millennials, and it was actually higher for millennials, 36% for those 45 and older, had talked about debt, income, investments, or spending before marriage. So less than half. And I get the impression if you haven't talked about it before marriage, you probably ain't talk about it in marriage as well. But, you know, yeah. maybe it doubled as soon as they put the ring on it. I don't know.
Oh, no, but finances, I mean, we can look up the stats for this too, but from what I recall, finances, money issues are the number one reason why people get divorced.
Yep.
So why not talk about it? I know it's taboo. It's taboo to talk about money. We didn't grow up talking about money. We probably didn't see our parents talk about money, but it's something that makes the world go round and you just have to talk about it. You have to be on one accord with each other. And it's not a this is yours, this is mine type of thing. It's a ours. And if you don't have that mindset of this is a ours, I don't know if you're ready to get married.
I realized that these questions were actually of married people. So we're going to go ahead and move forward. I feel like it's getting a little hot over here. So,
well, some people don't want to get married, right? So if you want to be in a long-term partnership, you need to talk about this as well. So it's not just for the married folks. It's for people who are, and if that person that is sitting in front of you, that person that's sitting next to you, if you see them and you want them to be in your life for a very, very long time, you need to talk about money. Oh, and you need to be talking about your credit score too. I mean, we can have a conversation about this because once you get married, everything is together.
Real over here. I didn't expect this.
Mm-hmm.
So you also want to talk a little bit about understanding the difference between tax prep and tax planning. And I hadn't heard it specifically broken down in that way. So why those two categories and what's the difference?
Yeah. So let's circle in taxes here. So the difference between tax prep and tax planning. So right now, here we are, we're in, you know, the March, April timeframe where most people do their taxes and it's tax prep. So we're prepping to file our taxes. And when we're in tax prep mode, we are historians. We are looking back. We're in 2019 right now. So we're looking in 2018. What has happened in 2018 that I need to report to the IRS? That's tax prep. Anything in tax prep, there's nothing that you can do about it. So let's say you go to H&R Block, let's say you're a DIYer and you do it yourself, or you have a CPA and they say, hey, Marcus, you owe $5,000. You're like, whoa, 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 what can I do to switch this up? You can't do anything. So that's when tax planning comes into play. So tax planning, you are looking forward. This is something that is totally different because you are being very strategic about your taxes and how you're maneuvering and moving around. So it means thinking ahead and taking action right now. So next year, you're not overwhelmed or overpaying or underpaying your taxes. So let's take that same example, Marcus, and you go to your CPA and they're saying, hey, it's October based on the interest and dividends that you're earning in your paycheck based on the amount that you're putting towards your 401k or TSP or 403b, whatever retirement account that you have, based on the deductions that you have, you still owe $5,000. And then you can say, oh, wait, is there anything I can do? Then they can say, well, are you maxing out your 401k? And you would say no. And so you'll say, okay, well, put more money towards your 401k and they'll reduce your overall taxable liability. So all that stuff you can do in the tax year, in that current tax year. So that's just one example of tax planning.
Sorry, I was a little taken aback because in this scenario, I owe $5,000 twice. So it took me a little bit to collect my thoughts.
It's hypothetical. You really don't. Let's knock on wood real quick. You don't owe no $5,000.
Yeah, I'm actually, for the people that are interested, I'm waiting to see currently. So I wouldn't say looking ahead. I actually just got paranoid. So I went ahead and filled out all the forms and everything just to get an estimate of how much currently I have a tax return. I was actually surprised.
Oh, good.
Mostly because of all the negativity was online. I'm like, man, I'm going to owe money. So I think this might be the last year in which that circumstance exists. And for those interested, it did go up. I think I fell in that. I was talking to somebody about this. I fell in that window where I'm too broke to get taxed higher. And I'm in a no tax state. What is it called?
State income tax?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Texas is not a, Yeah. So I got lucky there. And then I didn't make enough to get hit on the other end. So I fell right in that just broke enough to sneak by, get a tax return window. So for, yeah, hopefully I wish that same tax-free loan to the treasury to other people. So you go ahead and get that little return up. And if not, you shedding a few tears and you mad, you trying to pause the podcast right now, I apologize for you.
Right. So yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. And so I know you have a lot of people who are maybe have side hustles or are entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast. And so the question then for them is like, what can you do to plan ahead?
Well, and I do not know. So this is an open-ended question. Isn't there some year-end moves that they can make? And I'm not advocating for it, but at the end where they can fund a SEP RIA, or isn't there at least like, I mean, they're very limited, but like in there like four different moves they can make at the end to reallocate their money if they have that opportunity?
Well, I don't know, because it really depends on your individual situation. So does it make sense for a SEP? Does it make sense for a solo 401k? Does it make sense for a simple IRA? It all depends. It all depends if it's just you. It depends if you have employees, because if you have employees and you have a SEP or a simple IRA, you actually have to pay a percentage to their retirement account as well. And so in different states have their own definition of what's considered an employee. And paying them a W-2 may not be the end-all be-all of the definition of what is an employee. I ran into this situation with a client who is in New York, where she has a business and she has a lot of freelancers that work for her. Although she paid a couple W-2 and some 1099 because of the amount that they work and when they need to be available, they're actually considered employees. And so now we're trying to figure out what's the best retirement plan for her. Is it a SEP or is it a simple? She can't qualify for a solo 401k because she has employees. So for that question, it depends. But for the folks who are trying to figure out, like, you know, what moves do I need to be making for 2019, you definitely want to plan ahead. And you want to make sure you have all of your documents. And so if you are someone who has a business, you want to be sending out a form W-9. And people are probably like, what is that? Just Google Form W-9. Basically, it is so you can get a 1099 at the end of the year. Guarantee whomever is paying you, they are deducting you from their expenses, you know, for their taxes, especially if it's another business. And so it's reported to the IRS. So if they pay you more than $600 per year, you definitely want to be sending them a W-9 form. I've seen a situation where someone was, you know, they didn't want to claim all of the income that they made, and they, you know, were a self-employed business or, you know, self-employed individual. And when it came time for them to buy a home, the IRS audited version of their tax return versus the one that they actually gave the mortgage folks, it didn't match up. And it was because they didn't count or, you know, file all of their income. And so they actually had to not only get their taxes amended and redone, so you're paying someone for that, now they owe taxes as well. And then unfortunately, they couldn't move forward with purchasing the home because it just put them in such a financial bind.
And so I know that there are people who, as soon as they could file their taxes, they filed them. And I used to be one of those people where maybe I didn't think of every possible scenario. And I just wanted to get that money as quickly as possible because I had a trip coming up. And of course, we had the federal shutdown, which of course, people probably wanted that money as quickly as possible because they had expenses to cover. But I found that when I was younger, and I'm assuming other people have done this, where as soon as that first day comes up, they file, they get that money, they spend it. And so there may be some folks who are listening to this episode who've already filed their taxes. And so my question, and I think I might know the answer, is, so let's say they're listening to this, they realize that there's some stuff that they did wrong and they need to go back and look at it, and that they actually are owed more money. Now, I know that that can be corrected, I believe, in some ways in the following year's taxes, but are folks able to go back and amend now if they realize that they were a little bit hasty in submitting their taxes?
I think so. I'm not a CPA, so I'm not sure 100%, but I think you can always go back in and amend your taxes.
Got it.
As a short answer for that, which goes back to a question I get all the time is, when should I start paying someone to do my taxes for me? Right. And so if you have just one W-2 and you're single, that's a fairly easy. You can stay a DIYer. You can download TurboTax and do it yourself. If you're married, no children, just, you know, two regular W-2 income, two income household, that's fine. However, if there's any new major life events in your life, such as you purchased a home, you got married, you started investing in the stock market, and maybe you sold some funds in your brokerage account and you took some gains or losses, you started a new job that offers RSUs or stock options and they have a vesting schedule and you need to prep to make sure you can put some money aside for taxes for that. If you have a side hustle, especially in 2018, there are so many different changes in the tax law that you just don't know about. So if you fall under any of those circumstances where you have any new major life events, it would be in your favor. It would be so advantageous for you to just hire someone and pay someone, even if it's for that year, just so you can make sure you know that you are taking all of the deductions that's available to you. You are making sure that there's nothing erroneous, incorrect on your tax return. And then also learn from them. One of the responsibilities of the tax preparer is also to educate you. So don't walk out of their office until they explain everything to you on your 1040, on your Schedule C, if you are a self-employed individual, on your Schedule A, if you're itemizing your deductions. Like, that's their responsibility to explain that to you. Because when you sign your tax return, if they made an error, that error is still on you. That is not their responsibility. You can't say, "Oh, I'm taking." No, Uncle Sam is going to come after you for more taxes. So that's something that you just have to be aware of. And then the following year, you're like, "Okay, nothing changed. I had a lot of life changes in the year before, but I paid somebody to do my taxes. I can follow what they're doing." The Congress didn't pass a new tax law, so I'm good. And, go back to being a DIYer. But I think 2018 and 2019 is a great year to hire somebody.
Hey, folks, we're taking a quick break from our chat with Rianca to tell you about today's sponsors. Have you been struggling to get through that book list because life's been coming at you too fast? That was me until I discovered Blinkist. Blinkist summarizes the key takeaways from thousands of nonfiction books and shortens them to reads or listens that you can knock out in about 15 minutes apiece. That means you could finish two books or more during a lunch break at the day gig, and the same goes for the morning when you're going through your routine before heading to work. Speaking of routines, I listened to Peak Performance this morning and was reminded of the importance of habits. It's a good book, one you should definitely check out if you're trying to get your life together and be the best. Right now, for a limited time only, Blinkist has a special offer for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/paychecks to start your free 7-day trial. That's BLINKIST.com/paychecks, Blinkist.com/paychecks. Get going on expanding your knowledge and professional skills with the University of California Irvine's continuing education programs. UC Irvine ranks among the top 50 universities nationally and is also one of the top 10 public universities in the country. Whether you're trying to start your own thing, get a new job, or better understand how to operate in these business streets, UC Irvine's online courses can help you get there. They've got courses on finance, marketing, IT, and a lot more. So if you've been thinking about going to the digital classroom, this could be the opportunity you've been looking for. UCI's spring quarter is coming up and registration is open. Visit ce.uci.edu/podcast and enter promo code podcast for 15% off one course. Again, visit ce.uci.edu/podcast and enter promo code podcast for 15% off one course. And if you couldn't write that down, be sure to check the show notes for the link. And now, back to our conversation with Rianca. Bye. Not really, though.
Well, you introduced a couple of things, so I'll get these in the show notes here, but we talked a little bit about a SEP IRA. So number one, shout out to the listener who corrected me, but accurately, it is an individual retirement account. I've been saying that incorrectly. I don't know how many times. But a SEP IRA is a type of traditional IRA for self-employed individuals or small business owners. Any business owner with one or more employees or anyone with freelance income can open a SEP IRA. I'll get the article for more information about that from money.com. And can you talk a little bit, so we're in the, let's say we're going to transition, you know, we're going to live our best life. So we're tax planning. What's the basic do's and don'ts for not only tax season 19, but just tax season period?
So I think you just have to understand that there are a lot of changes in just the, it's called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that passed back in 2018. I think one of the major changes is that you want to see if you still qualify for itemized deductions or if it makes sense for you to take a standard deduction. So basically, the standard deductions double for pretty much everybody across the board. So a standard deduction now is $12,000 for single filers if you file single, $24,000 for married couples filing jointly, and then $18,000 for head of households. And so you can easily look at your 2017 taxes and look at your itemized or your Schedule A and see if it was over or below that number. So for example, what do I mean? Let's say I filed my taxes and my itemized deductions was $23,000. And now the standard deduction is $24,000. Well, it doesn't make sense for me to itemize my taxes. It makes sense for me to take the standard deduction. And so I know a lot of people at the end of the year starts giving away a lot of stuff, you know, so they can be like, oh, I'm going to put these on my taxes. You know, I can, because they itemize their taxes. And now, although I think it's great and you should still do that for the goodness out of your heart, but it may not make an impact on your taxes anymore.
Yeah, I used to be one of those people.
That's one. Another huge one that is going to impact people that live in high income states. So Marcus, you don't have to worry about this, so you can close your ears.
Yes.
But for those who live in like New York, Maryland, California.
Yes.
Yes. There's it sounds like you know what I'm talking about, Rich. It's a new limit. They put a cap on property tax deductions at $10,000. So SALT is an acronym for state and local taxes. And so now under the new law, homeowners are the ones who are able to itemize your deductions because of mortgage interest and property taxes and all of that. Homeowners will now only be able to deduct $10,000. And I'm fuming for that, because I live in Maryland and we have high state income taxes and property taxes, and that hit us like that. We are affected by this new cap. So again, it's like, well, what does that mean for you as an individual? Now, should you start to increase your withholdings if you have a salaried job? One way around this, or to prep from a tax planning perspective so that you don't owe a lot of money at the end of the year, because now there's this cap on this property tax. It's like, all right, I'm just going to withhold more throughout the year so I'm not hit with a big tax bill at the end. And that's something also for folks who maybe who are in a two income household. One's a W-2, one is a self-employed individual, is that, for the W-2 individual, just have them withhold more from their taxes, increase their federal and state withholdings so that the income that's coming in from the self-employed individual, hopefully they have a profit in their business. And if so, it's not going to be such a big hit from a tax perspective, because that other person who holds a W-2 job was withholding taxes. And this is, of course, if you married filing jointly.
And to withhold more, is that quite literally? Are you saying put more savings to the side, or do they need to fill out a form?
Yeah, they need to fill out a form. And I think it's a W-4. W-4.
Yeah, this is like the 0 versus 1 versus 2.
Yes.
What you're talking about. Yep.
Yes. It. Yep. Yep. That's exactly what it is.
And you had talked about earlier lowering the taxable income, but I think it'll be more relevant and applicable to people now. Can you talk about how putting money towards as an option, either a 401k or, I don't think we talked about it, but a health savings account, an HSA, how does that lower taxable income? Can you kind of walk through that?
Yeah, absolutely. For example, let's say you earn $100,000, and this is, you know, regular W-2 employee. You earn $100,000 and you want to max out your 401k. And the max this year for 2019 is $19,000. And so if you don't put anything away in a retirement account, you're going to be taxed on the $100,000. However, if you say, hey, you know, I can afford to put $19,000 away, now you're being taxed at $81,000. That's a huge difference. So that's one way. As a, you know, as a self-employed person, it's similar. It's just taxed a little differently, but same concept. You know, you are putting it away. It's a double positive for you. You're not only putting it away for retirement, but then you're also reducing your overall taxable income.
And I want to give a shout out to our Facebook group to know that most of these questions are coming from them. So tax season question, hashtag ask the expert, hashtag ask PB. And if you didn't get your questions in there, you either didn't pay attention to the group or maybe you should join. And over on Twitter, we also asked the same, what were their tax season questions? And one of theirs was, how do I start paying quarterlies after 2019? I think a lot of people are going to be interested in this. So how, people including myself are interested in this. So how does quarterly taxes work?
So this is a really great question. And I think we need to start with why. Like, why do people pay quarterly taxes? And quarterly taxes are typically paid by people who own a business. And first, you should understand that in the U.S., we are on a pay-as-you-go or pay-as-you-earn system. So if you work in corporate America, every other week or however often you get paid, federal taxes are being taken out, because it's on a pay-as-you-go or pay-as-you-earn system. So because you own your own business, now you have to do that yourself. So that's why you have to pay quarterly taxes. And there is a underpayment penalty if, from the income you earn in specific quarters, if it's below the threshold of what the IRS is saying you should have paid, there can be a percentage penalty that you have to pay, not only the taxes that you owe them, but they're saying, oh, and you underpaid because you didn't pay us anything. So we're going to slap on another percentage of tax. Again, if you own a business, this is why you need to hire a CPA, because they can explain this to you and the importance of paying quarterly taxes. So that's the why. So the how is you should understand when you need to pay taxes. So quarterly taxes, the first one for voucher one, is paid April 15th. And that kind of sucks, because if you owe taxes, you need to pay taxes by April 15th. So it's a double whammy, very technical term there. It's a double whammy if you owe taxes and you want to start on a good foot for the following year and start paying quarterly taxes. So April 15th is when the first payment is due, then June 17th, and then September 16th, and then January 15th of the following year. So January 15th of the following year is when you pay your Q4 or your voucher 4 quarterly taxes. I believe even with a system like TurboTax, or if you do it yourself, if you end up owing taxes, typically the system will share with you like, hey, you should probably start paying quarterly taxes so you don't have this issue again the following year. And then they'll have vouchers. So if you do your taxes yourself, or if you receive taxes from your CPA and they don't explain it to you, if you ever saw the word voucher, like, this is what it's for. It's so you can pay your quarterly payments.
And for either small business or freelancers, what are some of the common deductions they should keep in mind?
Well, the biggest one is, you know, definitely putting towards your retirement. I'm always going to advocate towards that, because you're paying yourself first, so to say, and you're saving for the future. So that is a just overall deduction for you. And really, it depends. It depends on what type of freelancer or what type of business you have. If you are a, let's say, for example, a personal trainer, you can, and your business is personal training and you have a studio or something, you need equipment. The equipment is deductible. That rental or that facility fee supplements sometimes, because, I mean, this is your job, right? Workout clothes, shoes, just your internet, your phone, because how do you contact your client? So something that you should think about is, what do you need and buy to keep your business running? So think about all of those things and just write them down, and then talk to your tax planner or your CPA and say, can I deduct these? Because they would know better than me, depending on the type of industry that you're in. So for me, for example, I'm a financial planner. I run a virtual financial planning firm. So although I do work out all the time, I can't deduct my workout clothes. I wish. I can't deduct my gym membership. I wish. But the things I can deduct is, you know, my cell phone bill, my internet. I own a home, so the square footage of my office that's in my house, that's deducted. Utilities, my lights, my heat, my gas, a percentage of that based on the percentage of square footage that my office takes up, we can deduct. You know, if I'm taking out clients, that's considered entertainment, that's partially deductible. So there's a lot as a small business owner that you can deduct. I'll put an asterisk here and I'll say, I know I'm very conservative when it comes to taxes. And when I say that, I don't put everything up there, I guess, as far as deductions. Like, even if I'm going out with, I don't know, if it's a client, yes. I don't know. I know some people who are like, oh yeah, we just talked about business, so I'm going to pull out my business credit card. I'm like, because if you get audited, knock on wood, if you get audited, they want to see your receipts. They want to know what you talked about and see if it was actually business. And so if you're not keeping meticulous records, like, that's going to be a hindrance for you. So that's what I mean by conservative. Like, even though, say for Rich, you, Rich and Marcus, you and I, we go out and we talk shop or whatever. I may or may not put that on my, you know, my business card. I might put that on my personal card.
Yeah, I'm too paranoid. I would just put that on the personal card and get those points real quick.
Yeah. But I know some people who are like, oh, just talked about business. Boom. Credit card. And I'm just like, I don't know about that. So just keep meticulous records. If you have questions on, like, what can be deducted, what can't be deducted, this is when it pays to hire someone, because you don't know what you don't know.
And that's so real, because a big thing for me right now is I'm realizing that I need another computer, because I'm at this point where I'm getting battery warnings. I've got two keys that are stuck. So I got an external keyboard on top of my regular keyboard, which is a really bootleg and annoying setup. And someone suggested, oh, just buy a new computer. You can write it all since you also have this business on the side. But I'm realizing that I probably actually need to move away from the TurboTax route. Because even with the new computer, yes, I'm going to use it a lot for business, but I'm also going to use it for personal. And I know that there's a lot of diciness around that as well. So I think that's a good call out, where if you do have a full-time job and you also have one or multiple things on the side, it might just make sense to have that one conversation, like you said earlier, even if you end up doing it yourself going forward, but to have that first conversation to make sure you're doing everything the right way versus finding out through an audit, which is one of my worst fears.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of the most common tax issues I see with freelancers, either if they have a side hustle on the side, freelancing for multiple companies, or if you are a small business owner, it's paying the taxes, especially in the first few years. They're just not planning to pay those quarterly taxes. And so with every dollar that you earn, just some advice that I give to my clients who own a small business, I'm like, just put 25% aside. So for every dollar that you earn, it's actually 75 cents. And so, and make it such that it's automatic, so you don't see it. And so you don't feel it. You don't even know it's missing. And so at the end of the year, when you're doing your tax planning, you know, if your tax planner says, hey, I think you might owe X, Y, and Z, you can probably do some tax strategies to lower it. But even if the result is such that you owe money, at least it's not a financial burden to you the following year. You're just like, okay, I got that sitting on the side. They ain't no problem.
So I did have a quick question that just came to mind. like for myself right now, I've gotten into doing consulting on the side and I created a separate bank account for that. So do you advise that people then create an additional bank account and take whatever revenue that they receive and just move 25% of that into what's essentially their tax paying account?
Yeah, it's or a savings account. So, you know, have a checking and savings account and just move 25% to the savings account.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I guess if this was a visualization, the Venn diagram, you talked about this a little bit. What is the overlap and or division of labor for a CPA and a CFP as far as the roles for a small business owner or just for any individual?
Oh, this is a great question. So I'm a CFP. I'm a certified financial planner. Part of my education, I had to learn tax planning. So all of this tax planning strategies, it was part of my education. It was part of my exam. So that's why I know so much about taxes. I can review your tax return and let you know if you have an error. So that's my part. I don't prepare the taxes. That's what a CPA or a certified public accountant is for. Their job is to prepare the taxes. Now, you heard me say throughout our conversation, CPA versus tax planner. And a tax planner can be a CPA, but a CPA may not be a tax planner. And what I mean by that is for tax planners who I love working with, who are also CPAs, we have conversations throughout the year for that client. So the client, again, is in the center, and we're having conversations on a quarterly basis about that client, especially if they're small business owners. If they're not, then we'll probably talk maybe once or twice a year. But and if there's a major life change, so if there's like a huge jump in income, we'll have a conversation before the end of the year. If they have a new job with RSUs or stock options, we're definitely having a conversation before the end of the year. But for my small business owners, we talk at least 3 to 4 times a year so that for the business owners, you know, they're sending us their reconciled books. So if you have a lot of transactions, if you, again, like it's so important for you to keep meticulous records. And it's so that we can help you, the CFPs and the CPAs. So their job is to help with the tax projections. They know more than me. That's their job. Their job is to know the tax law. I just so happen to know the tax law too. But it's their job to know the tax law changes. It's their job to know which retirement account is best for you. It's my job to explain to them like, okay, this client, they just started this year, but next year they are going to hire 3 employees. So while the CPA may have said initially like, oh, this client has really great revenue, profits, let's open up a solo 401k. Well, that's only going to be for 1 year because again, remember with the solo 401k, you can only be one person or your spouse can work with you, but that's it. You can't have employees. So my job as a CFP is going to be, well, tax planner, though this client is making some great revenue, awesome profits, the solo 401k is a short-term, is a short-term goal because long-term, she's going to hire 3 employees next year. Oh, thank you for telling me. So let's not move forward with the solo 401k. Maybe let's you know, do the SEP IRA or the simple IRA. So that's our job in a nutshell, is a tax planner who is also a CPA. It's for us to have dialogue centered around the client. I know everything about the client. So it's my job to reciprocate that or to give that information that's pertinent as it relates to taxes to the tax planner so that they can do their job and provide some good tax projections. And we can talk and figure out what's in the best interest for the client. Now, not every CPA is a tax planner. There are CPAs who just like tax preparation and then that's it. There are also some people who are just, and I'm putting in quotes, tax preparers who hangs their shingles between January and April and then that's it. If you are moving into a business and especially a growing business, you want to move away from working with those type of people and you want to work with someone who actually does tax planning and tax prep throughout the year.
Yeah, we both just did that at the same time. I'm like, I did
yeah,
not.
I'm learning
never
a lot here. I'm glad we did this episode.
Awesome.
I think we've hit the majority of the questions that came in from the people. Again, y'all can visit paychecksandbalances.com and hit that Ask PB button if you have any follow-up. Thank you for the people who submitted to date. And is there anything else that generally you'd like to speak to about the people? I mean, I felt like you already did a great sales job here, but is there anything else that you want to talk about either as a financial planner or for yourself?
No, that's it. Yeah, I think, you know, taxes... Taxes can be so boring, right? But I love taxes because you can learn a lot about a business. You can learn a lot about how the business is growing just looking over over a couple of tax years. And while it's something that we don't like to do, it is advantageous for you to start doing some tax planning for yourself and for your family so that you don't, you know, just get hit with these huge financial burdens when it comes tax season. Just try to think of tax planning as something that's in the best interest of your business and the best interest of your family. And hopefully that makes it a little easier.
And for more information, I want to replug. Folks can go listen to, that was episode 108, A Financial Plan for Henrys. But where can they find you on the social medias and around the web?
Yes. So on social media, my personal handle is Rianka_D. So that's Rianka_D. I'm on Instagram. I post Instagram stories almost every day. They're entertaining and educational. I'm on Twitter as well. You can also follow my financial planning firm, Your Greatest Contribution. The handle is YGC Planning. And also, if you're interested in diversity and inclusion, I have a podcast and platform called 2050 Trailblazers. And you can follow that at 2050TBS.
Thank you, Rianka. Always a pleasure. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Rianka back in with the church fans waving hashtag financial nuggets. So we appreciate her for coming on the show and helping us get our lives right. I'll say just lives. I'll fix our lives. Our whole lives is back in order now. And I hope you feel the same.
Yeah, taxes are one of those things. We know we got to do it every year. And I mentioned on the episode, there are people who do it right on the first day you could file taxes. And I used to be one of those people because I wanted to get a hold of that money. Not because my margins were just so tight that I needed it, but it was something like, oh, I'm planning a trip or I need this money so that I can buy this thing that I was talking about buying. And looking back, in hindsight is always 2020. I wish I slowed down a little bit. I'm imagining that there's probably some money in the tax game that I've left on the table. And I hope that this was especially helpful for those who have thought about entrepreneurship, whether it's doing the full leap and starting your own business, and that's what fully supports you, or even if you're doing something on the side. So definitely a good one. And yeah, be sure to put it out there in those streets, which I'm sure we'll say again. So this week's five-star review comes from G.A. Virgo. So I'm assuming this is Georgia Virgo, but feel free to write in or hit us up on the socials and tell us if you meant something else. And so it starts off, great podcast, 5 stars. Hey guys, not sure how I stumbled up on your podcast, but glad I did. At the old age of 42, it's nice to know that there are younger people out there and younger people of color getting their life and finances together. Keep up the amazing work. So GA Virgo, really appreciate those 5 stars. Though you're not in the millennial generation, we respect it.
We'll go ahead and show some love. I think those are ex-Zennials right there on the cusp. So I think 42 is close enough. But
Zennials or whatever?
Or maybe they want to represent for Generation X. I'm not going, you know, generation shame. So Gen X doesn't really get the props that it deserves. So I'll go ahead and let them represent. So appreciate those 5 stars. And for those of you who somehow listened to those 55 minutes and somehow forgot already, don't forget to support us at paypal.co/FedEx. And if you just want to keep it simple, you can support us in the social media streets. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett with 1 T on Twitter because I ran out of characters, and 2 T's everywhere else on Earth because that's my government name. And Rich is all over the web at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
Don't forget to vote.
Yes, please vote. Super important this month. A major opportunity to impact us, not just for this year, but for years beyond. Thanks to everyone for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.